Hello and welcome to the LSAT Demon Daily. My name is Eric. I'm an LSAT Demon teacher and tutor, and joining me today is former LSAT Demon student and current applicant, Coy Ozias. Coy, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell me where you're at with your application process right now.
Yeah, sure. So I submitted my applications on November 2nd, which was when the October LSAT came out. So I submitted everything. That felt nice. And I started hearing some kind of results about a month after that. I got into UVA first. I had an interview there. And then in December, I got into Yale. So I was kind of surprised, but happy about that because it was pretty early. And I didn't have to interview or anything for them. And then on January 10th, I got the first round of admissions and I got into Harvard.
Amazing.
Deciding between Yale and Harvard, but I'm about 99% sure that Harvard's going to be kind of the way I want to go just because of the offerings they have. And I think it fits better with my interests.
Well, congratulations. That is just fantastic news. Dream results, obviously, for anybody. And when you're picking between those kinds of schools, you're probably not going to make a poor choice. So congratulations again.
Thank you.
You don't get there without a killer LSAT score.
You
studied with the Demon. I wonder, could you take us back to maybe just a brief overview of your LSAT journey and where you were when you started studying, what your whole timeline was?
Yeah, so I graduated in 2018. So I've been working for a few years. It's going my fifth year in DC. So I had some time to kind of strategically kind of plan out the application process. And I started studying very early. I started in June 2021. So it was about a year and a half total of studying. I took a diagnostic then in June and I got a 161. So I was happy about that. I did well in reading comp. I only missed three questions on the diagnostic. So I think I was kind of naturally positioned well for that. But logic games was my huge weakness. I think I missed like 15 questions on that first one. I didn't even know like what diagramming was or how to do it. And it continued to be a huge weakness for me. It reminded me of math, even though there's no math in it, and I hate math.
Sure.
So it was always something hard. So for the first, like from June until December, so around, you know, 6 months, I think I did kind of the typical thing that most people do. I looked on Amazon, top selling LSAT book. So I read that, you know, huge waste of time, but I read it and it kind of got me introduced to it. And then one of my friends who went to University of Michigan Law School told me about the LSAT Demon. And I started off with the podcast, the Thinking LSAT podcast, which I know we all know and love. And I started from the beginning and I try to watch them all. And it's an incredible amount of material. I think I got through like 100 and then I'm just like, oh, screw it. I'll just skip to the more
skip
recent
to
ones.
Skip to the end, sure.
But I just listened to them on repeat, just like constantly in the car everywhere. And they were just like always in my head. So that convinced me to check out the Demon, which I did in December of 2021. And I was pretty much hooked after that. And I think the real difference was I was finally like properly training by taking sections over and over and over again, timed, you know, like in the exact setting that the test is going to be in with, you know, the perfect video to help you with your exact mistake. And it was kind of the perfect solution to what I was looking for. And I had studied enough by that point. I didn't want to go to an in-person class. I didn't want to do an online class because I didn't want to waste my time with things I already knew. But the LSAT Demon is targeted to like specifically what you need help on. And that's where you kind of find the exact video for the exact question you missed. So that kind of like transformed my studying after that.
Nice. So you started with like basic or premium tier. You didn't feel the need for live classes. You felt pretty confident. I mean, with a 161 diagnostic, you felt pretty confident with your baseline approach to the test and just having that guidance on specific targeted things every once in a while, combined with diligent self-study and good review, that's what got you where you needed to go.
Yeah, I had gotten my scores up to about a 167 by that point. But I was still struggling to break through. So I decided not to do the live classes on the demon because I thought it would just be better if I could just focus on exactly what I need, and the demon allows you to do that. So I started off with basic until I just did all of the sections that basic allows. And then I can never remember what the tiers are. I think premium, and then that allows you to do all the tests. So I think I just stuck with premium after that. And I just literally created a spreadsheet, and I did every single section of, you know, LR, RC, and LG. I did all the sections and would just kind of mark how many I missed and review it. And then with logic games in particular, I remember I was really struggling with them. And I remember a podcast Nathan had, he's like, okay, if you're struggling with logic games, ask yourself, have you done all of them? And if the answer is no, then, you know, you're not ready yet. Like, there's so many you can do. And then once you've done them all, like, do them all again. So that's exactly what I did. I did all the logic games. I did them all again. And then I started doing them again for the third time. And thank God I was able to stop after the October test.
So yeah. Did every logic game multiple times on the way. Do you remember the feeling of the first time you scored a -0 on a logic game section?
Yeah, the beautiful -0. It's such a good feeling. I mean, when I would literally take logic game sections, even as far back as like January of last year, and I would take them and I'd be so mad because I would just run out of time and not even do like the last two games. I would literally break my pencil and throw it against the wall and be so upset. But I think what like changed it all for me was the worlds, like figuring out how to make worlds. And I probably took it to an extreme, and then I tried in every single logic game just to like find the choke points, which are usually like the conditional statements, or find any kind of like limited variable, and I would just make as many worlds as I could. And if you're struggling with logic games, I would urge you to basically dive in as much as you can into making worlds. Don't be afraid to make as many as you can. You might think it's a waste of time, but when you get to the end of that section and you have that, you know, template there, it's not even like you're even solving anything. You're just checking this structure that you've created.
The questions become boring, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So that made all the difference for me, was just figuring out how to quickly make as many worlds as I possibly could.
Nice. One thing that I found to be useful was having a variety of approaches, and you can finish any logic game in the demon, and there's three different, potentially wildly different approaches to the same game. Find the one that clicks for you. And also the way I think that even we've done the games has changed since some of those earliest videos in the demon.
Yeah.
So there's really a lot of variety.
It's a real skill and a real technique. In some of Matt Dumont's videos, I enjoyed because they were even, like, there's like a spectrum of like how into games I feel like they are, and like Ben's on one side, then Nathan, and then, you know, Matt's even more into it. So I kind of liked his videos because he would just make like 30 worlds or something ridiculous. Sure. But I that was kind of what I was into. And then there was like the technique, if I could advise any worlds technique, it would be circle slash. And it's pretty amazing how many worlds you can do circle slash with. And on the October test, I actually used circle slash, and I was so happy because I was finally able to use it. But it's things like that that can really just make, you know, the logic game section just feel like a completely different, you know, animal.
For sure. Now, one of the things that I think about a lot with building worlds, and like you mentioned, making a lot of worlds and always wanting to go deeper into worlds, is getting greedy. And that's a kind of a catchphrase at the demon is getting greedy. And on a game, you want to get greedy and understand the game better and perfect the game, and building more worlds is one way to do that. That catchphrase, getting greedy, was a headline of your email that you sent in to share the great news of your mission cycle. So maybe if you could go into that, on how you saw that mantra playing into your LSAT prep and your admission cycle. What were the ways that you got greedy approaching this whole thing?
Yeah, I guess initially I would get greedy in my practice, and that I would, you know, train exactly like I was going to compete on the test. And then I would like take a time section with like the exact desk, the exact chair, and the exact place at the time with my computer and everything set up. And I feel like I just kept raising my expectations that I just started to not be happy unless I missed zero or one. And I was like, zero or one is like all I'm happy with. And I would just try to get greedy and not be complacent with missing like four or five or something like that. So in that practice, just being repeating and repeating until I kind of got that I wanted. So I took my first test in June of last year, June 2022, and I got a 171. And I was happy about that. That was like right in the middle of my practice test scores. But I actually, like, I remember one of my friends did tutoring with Nathan. And she like brought Nathan out on the laptop at one point, and I said hi to him, and he's like, oh, you got a 171? I'm like, yeah. He's like, are you gonna get greedy? And I'm like, oh yeah. So nice. He was like encouraging me, like, just because you got that, which, you know, it's a good score and it can help you get into a lot of schools, but, you know, there is potential to kind of keep going up. So I took it again in August. I got a 172. Which was actually kind of devastating to me because I thought I did really well. I literally thought I might have gotten like a 180 because before then my scores had been kind of going up and up into the high 170s. So I was really starting to like expect that. So that was tough. And I had people telling me like, okay, man, like that's it. Just 172, like that's good enough. Give it a rest. And I'm like, no, I gotta keep going. So I did it in September, and this was the toughest one. Because I literally took it in September and I got another 172. I think I probably cried.
Throw a pencil at the wall.
Exactly. Throwing more things at the wall. And that's kind of, I think, when the like get greedy, be persistent, like be able to like react to adversity kicks in, because that was three times. It was the same exact score, which is just so frustrating. But my goal was basically to get at the median or above at target schools. So at Harvard, 174, Yale, 176. So that was like my goal, was to get at there or above. And people told me, like, if you take it again, they're not going to like that. The schools are going to kind of look down on multiple scores, which is something like Nathan and Ben say isn't necessarily true. And I kind of believed in that they take the highest score. So I was like, all right, one more shot. Took it in October, and I felt great. Before then, I'd been practicing so much. I had literally taken every single test in every single section. So it almost became a different way of studying, because everything I did studying, I had already done. But I was getting very high 170s, 180s. And then finally in October of last year, I got a 177. And that was it.
Fantastic. A true testament to not settling. Yeah. For less than what you knew you were capable of.
Yeah.
And for perseverance. This was a long, drawn out process for you. You said you did every single time section.
All of
you
them.
Did,
yeah.
You did every logic game multiple times.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look how it's paid off. Amazing.
Yeah, it is true. If you do it enough, if you do enough logic games, you will get good at it. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. Matter of putting in the time.
Yeah.
Besides that, you list a few other things that you saw as crucial to your success on the LSAT.
Yeah.
Some lessons that you learned or developed for yourself. The first one that you mentioned was the idea of starting early and training consistently.
Yeah.
Talk about that and how that played into your own training schedule.
If I could give any advice, I would tell people, like, the minute they start thinking about going to law school, start taking time sections as early as you possibly can. Doesn't matter if it's a year and a half or 2 years, literally like 3 years before, just immediately start doing it. Don't waste your time on like theory or the textbooks, just immediately start doing it. So start as early as possible with timed sections. That was something I didn't do. I was almost afraid to do it because it's hard and it like feels like, oh, it's such a direct, you know, reflection of how you did. But start as early as you can with time sections. And then the consistent training. So I adopted what Nathan and Ben say about an hour a day, like study every single day. So I study every single day, like no day off. And the hour a day is kind of nice because even if you're really busy. So last year I deployed to Iraq with Special Operations Forces because I'm an intelligence analyst. And we worked nonstop out there on the base, 14 hours every single day. But still, there's a little bit of time in the morning, a little bit of time in the afternoon. So I woke up every morning and I would take a section, go work, super long day. And then at night, I would watch videos of Ben and Nathan for like 20 minutes and then, you know, go to sleep. So it was about like about an hour on either side, like a section every morning, review at night. So even no matter how busy
working,
you are.
While working 14-hour days on deployment.
Yeah.
It's useful to hear because obviously not everyone's in the same space, but other people have their own time commitments with full-time work or multiple jobs or looking after family. And useful to remember that an hour a day, a good concerted hour a day around your other commitments can still get you to a 177.
Yeah, because 35 minutes to do a section, that's real quick. Anybody's got time for 35 minutes, even if that's all you do. And that's like a very valuable, you know, 35 minutes. So I think it's important to kind of keep that going every day, even if it's small bits.
Right. So the consistency of every day is key to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
100% agree. You also mentioned meditation. You found that meditation helped you?
Yeah. So again, Ben and Nathan are leaders. They said in the early part of the podcast, they talked about meditation and I started doing it and I literally found it to be like a perfect training tool for your mind because the LSAT is really a test of, you know, mental discipline and like extreme focus. And I have this in normal life, but on the test too, of like intruding thoughts that are constantly like trying to get your mind distracted. And I'd literally be like on the test and I'd be almost like my, you know, thoughts would like just purposely distract me or something. And it was just like, I had to figure out a way to deal with it. And meditation kind of helps you realize, like when you have those distracting thoughts, you just kind of let them be, like let them be where they are. And then just keep going back to the task at hand. Just keep going back, keep going back. And doing that before every section. So that was kind of my routine. I do meditation for like 5 to 10 minutes before I took every section. Kind of like gets you in that mindset to be able to handle those distractions and just keep focusing and keep focusing back.
Yeah. A little focus warm up before you start it every day.
Exactly. Love that. Yeah.
I do feel as if the more that I have gotten into meditation myself and certainly through my experience on the LSAT, I find that focus is really just refocusing.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Coming back to whatever it is you're doing, which is your breath when you do real meditation. But on the LSAT, it's just go back to like the word you're reading. Just keep going back to it. And eventually, you know, you'll be there and you'll continue.
Yeah. Talk to me about your review process. Because obviously taking that many time sections, you're going to generate a lot of wrong answers. How would you break down your review and whether it was on like one question at a time or reviewing a chunk of incorrect questions from a time section, how would you approach that review?
Pretty early on, I would have trouble with, I would take a section and I would get like, you know, 12 Logic Games questions wrong. And I had trouble like handling that initially. I guess I just expect things to just be easy and work well. But I kind of found that it's just so much wasted energy to like be upset about how many you missed and think about it and think, well, what does this mean and how I'm going to do on the test? And that really the only thing you can do is one, you can, you know, just give up and you're done, or you can review the mistakes, figure out what you did wrong, and then do it again. And then you just repeat that process as many times as possible. So I would try to just take a section. I would just review the ones that I got wrong. I would kind of quickly review the right ones just to like see if there was any weird stuff that I might have missed. On RC and LR, it's pretty like self-explanatory. You just kind of like watch the videos, kind of teach yourself how to do it. But Logic Games is where I had a little bit more of a technique where I would go back. I would try to repeat the game, time myself before watching the video. And then I would watch the video, watch how they set it up, and then I would do it again and time myself again. And then sometimes I would do it again to try to get my time down to like eight to 10 minutes or something like that.
Would you purposely try doing it with a different technique, like maybe starting worlds from a different variable or using a different setup? Or
no, I wouldn't necessarily do that. I think what I would try to do By the end, I was doing it very similarly to how Nathan or Matt was doing it. But sometimes I would just like not really get what the best setup was. And so I'd have to like try to rethink, okay, if I were to see this game again, I should set it up this way. I would suggest like not, I didn't try to force myself to set it up like a weird way. Like sometimes in some of his videos, Nathan's like, oh, let me try setting it up with H this time. And it's like a weird
Sure.
one. And I would try not to like do, I would just try to pick what I thought was the most intuitive and then just like keep doing it.
Yeah. I think it can be useful to explore the different
Different
ways
ways.
that a game can be solved. Though it is true that those of us who have done the LSAT for a long time and even teach it, having seeing the same games over and over, whether it's for our sake primarily or the sake of our students, there is a tendency to say, well, let me just try something totally different this time.
Yeah, exactly. That makes
There is
sense.
often a more efficient way, but it can be useful to, I think, play around with the technique. Cool. You had a motto for yourself when you were taking sections. What was that?
I think I like developed this in the like maybe August test because I found when I like took the official test, I was taking an LR section and I was like, oh my God, this is like the real test. I need to like really like make sure all these answer choices are correct. And I spent like too much time like almost like gloating, like, oh yeah, that answer choice definitely not right. That one's definitely not right. And I ran out of time and probably missed, I don't know, like two or three at the end. And I was just like really mad at myself. So I kind of developed this motto that I call attack, predict, move. So you're probably pretty familiar with like the first two, attack and predict. Nathan and Ben talk about it all the time. And you can kind of break it down per section. So literally each time I would start, I'd be like, okay, this is the attack phase. So in LR, of course, you read the question stem first, which I didn't do for the first like 5 or 6 months, and then I finally gave in to Nathan and started reading the question, or not, yeah, started not reading the question stem first. Basically attacking the stimulus, like identifying the conclusion, the evidence, the potential flaw, all of that stuff. And then same in RC, kind of attacking the passage and trying to figure out, you know, before you go even into the questions, what's the main point? What are like, what's the argument? What are potential counter arguments? Sometimes in RC, you can even tell that there's weird language or certain sentences that you can kind of think that they're going to ask questions about. So like thinking about that. And then in logic games, attacking is just, you know, looking at the game and figuring out where are the choke points, how do I make as many worlds as possible? So that's attack. And then predict, I think it's easy to like think you're predicting, but you're really not. And you're like, oh yeah, I predict. But it is like a harder thing to do, especially when you're trying to go fast, but it is a way that actually does speed you up. So in LR, like I said, you try to actually just predict in your head, okay, the main conclusion is this, the flaw is this. And then in RC, I tried to try doing the same thing of like predicting, you know, what's the main conclusion before I even go in, or like summarizing the paragraph. But then this third part was, I don't think I've heard it too much on the podcast, and it'd be interesting to see what Nathan and Ben think, but it's move. So once you've done those first two parts, you attack it and then you predict the answer, you should be able to just like find the answer, correct answer choice, you know, like a heat-seeking missile, just go straight to it. It should just like pop off the page. And then once you find it, I would always tell myself like, okay, move. And then like quickly look at the other answer choices, make sure they're not wrong. But it's really easy to just get like mired down in the answer choices and keep being like, okay, that's not right because of this, and it's not right because of that, and this too, and this. But if you just like quickly check them all off and move to the next one, that keeps you at a good pace so that you can actually finish it. So I'd kind of have to remind myself to like keep moving to keep on a good pace.
I love that. I love that advice to keep moving once you have your prediction. And like you said, the correct answer choice just pops off the page. It sounds like on, I think you said your August test, your experience was that maybe you were approaching the answer choices differently on official test day, whether you were taking more time to make sure that you got it right,
That's what it was. Exactly.
testing all of the answer choices a little bit more. Super common. Super common to hear students talk about this. because there is the added pressure of official test day. Mm-hmm. And I think your advice there to move mm-hmm. matches certainly the idea that we should be dismissing the wrong answer choices super yeah. quickly.
Yeah.
And that we don't need to fully articulate
mm-hmm.
why a wrong answer is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, on the day, we just have to justify why the right one's right.
Exactly.
We don't need to fully explain why every wrong yeah. one is incorrect.
And sometimes you just have a feeling and it's a little bit difficult to put into words. You just read it and you're like, oh, those words just don't sound right. And you could probably spend like 5 minutes dissecting it and trying to figure out, explain why it's wrong or why it could be right. But like trying to just kind of trust your initial gut feeling of like, that's just not right. Especially after you found a good one. That's when you like got to move quickly.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the word I've experienced this as well. Like answer choice A, I think it's wrong, but can yeah. I explain why it's wrong? And then yeah. I spend 30 seconds explaining to myself why it's wrong. Like, well, maybe I'll leave it open. And then answer choice B. Oh, well, that's the right answer.
Yeah,
why exactly. didn't I just move to this quicker?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. And then that allowed me. One thing I like that Nathan said is to kind of take the test. Like once you do all these things, you start taking the test on a higher plane. And that's sort of how I felt in October is I just felt like just so comfortable with the test and just kind of attacking, predicting the answer before I even got in there, like finding it immediately, moving on and just like moving at a good pace. And you feel like you're just at a higher level, just kind of like floating over the section.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great, great feeling.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, congratulations again on getting there, on reaching that higher plane and on crushing the test.
Yeah, thank you.
If you don't mind sharing a little bit more about your story of why you're getting into law, maybe your background, you mentioned you're in the military.
Yeah.
What your transition into law is and what it is that you're hoping to do in your legal career.
Yeah, sure. So I started studying Arabic when I was pretty young. When I was in high school, I did this State Department scholarship to study in Morocco. And that was like my first time I'd been overseas, and it kind of like opened up this like window into Middle Eastern politics and history that I continued into college. So I went to Princeton. I majored in Near Eastern Studies and Arabic, studied abroad multiple times. And I just got really into basically international affairs, foreign policy, national security, focused on the Middle East. So after I graduated, I figured one of the best places to kind of put that knowledge to work is in the intelligence community. So I'm not actually in the military. I'm just a civilian intelligence analyst that's within the Department of Defense in the Defense Intelligence Agency. So it's basically like the military civilian intelligence arm. So I was there for the first 3 years I was there. I didn't think about going to law school at all. I went to, I did a rotation at the Pentagon at the Joint Staff for about a year and a half. And then at some point, I think I saw that I wanted to be more involved in the actual policymaking process. So intelligence analysts, they inform the policymaker, give them the information, but then the policymaker makes the decision. So I wanted to be a little bit more involved in actually making that decision. And I found that a lot of people in those positions went to law school, had law degrees, and were involved as a legal counselor in the National Security Council or in a congressional committee or something like that. So I thought it'd be a great way for me to kind of get the skills to do that type of work and then help me get the positions that would kind of help accelerate me into, you know, policy. So that's ultimately why I'm going to law school and kind of what I hope to do afterward.
To get in the room where it happened, pretty much.
That's right. That's right.
So is your decision and when you're weighing schools like Harvard and Yale, yeah. I doubt you'll make an incorrect decision, but looking yeah. at the programs there and the outcomes there, you're judging based on which seems most appropriate on that track?
Yeah, I think Harvard has the best national security law program potentially in the country from just, you know, the research I've done. They have, you know, the centers, the clinics, the internships, the professors, just there's a lot of offerings there. First of all, it's just a big school. It has, you know, a lot of students, a lot of professors, a lot of things going on. So there's a lot of opportunities. And that's particularly with, you know, national security law. So that was kind of the main, you know, determinant for me was all those opportunities. And then the alumni network within the kind of the national security law realm in the government is pretty strong. So I think that could help me as well.
Well, Coy, thank you very much for taking the time out to share your story and to share your advice. I love the motto of attack, predict, move.
That's right.
Sprinkling that into some of my classes as well. Congratulations again. Wish you the very best with law school and with your decision and then whatever comes next for you. Please stay in touch. Any final words of wisdom or things that current LSAT students should know before we wrap things up today?
Yeah, I guess if you're studying right now, you know, hopefully you're applying for next cycle. And I would just try to encourage you not to be discouraged. And even if, you know, at this time last year, I was missing tons of questions on tons of sections, and just kind of just have faith that if you, you know, keep moving, if you keep going and kind of take as many sections as you can, keep reviewing, do an hour every day, you really will, you know, get better and you can get there.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, thanks again, Coy. Please stay in touch. Want to hear all the great things that are in store for you.
Yeah, thank you.
And to you, the listener, if you have any LSAT or law school admissions news that you want to share, or if you want to share your own LSAT success story, get a hold of us at daily@lsatdemon.com. Thanks for listening.